This is the April 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Naomi Bloom. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Greg Johnson at TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, is here, along with Jim McCormick, too, of AgMarket.net in Barrington, Illinois. The theme music for the Commodity Week program is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of my brother, Logan County, Illinois, farmer Tim Gleason. And you can always find us up online at willag.org at WILLAG.org. Let's begin by getting a list of items that we should discuss from our panelists for the day. Naomi Bloom, we'll start with you. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk about that cattle market. Of course, we've had that market just accelerate higher here recently, and a little bit of a price pullback the last couple days ahead of the cattle on feed report tomorrow. And also news today that Secretary Rollins tomorrow is going to be having a news conference from Texas. So we've got quite a few things to be looking about with cattle.
We'll do that. Greg Johnson at TGM, on your mind?
Well, even though the first USDA supply and demand report that incorporates the 2026 acres and yield isn't going to be released for another 3 weeks, I don't think it's too soon to start playing the what-if game. And I think it's a good exercise to put some numbers in there and see where they come out. And I think that'll give farmers kind of an idea of where to maybe have offers in and what the price range may be this year.
Oh, that should be fun. Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net in Barrington, on your list.
Well, the one thing I'd like the group to talk about is the shift in acres. I mean, I've talked to several clients here in the last couple of days, especially down in Southern Illinois, Southern Indiana, Ohio, so they are seeing quite a few farm producers and neighbors who are planning on planting corn that they're hearing are shifting to beans because of the lack of fertilizer and just the higher costs. And I want to get the group's feedback if they think this is more of a regional problem or if this is something that's going to come up and, you know, we're going to be debating all spring and summer until we get the final certified acres.
Well, we'll work our way from that to the new crop WASDE in the month of May. But Jim, let's start with you, because just this week, there are a couple of things that are going on across the planet related to the Iran war and fertilizer availability. I talked with Ishan Banu, who is with the logistics consultancy company Kipler, earlier in the week. He looked, as we were on the phone, at 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning at how many ships had been loaded with fertilizers but were stuck inside the Persian Gulf, behind the Strait of Hormuz. There were 42. They had arrived there and loaded after the closure, so they were somewhere between, you know, 3 weeks waiting and a couple of days, but that's not a small number. He said generally when he looks, there are 15 to 18 of them potentially, so let's call it 2.25 times the number. They're not come out yet, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. The other thing is that India has been in the marketplace tendering for fertilizers out of the United States, nitrogen in particular. I did watch Josh Linville today, and he made note that those tenders were above $900 on both the east and western coasts of the United States, or the ports from those two sides. So, given all of that background, what kind of shift in acres might you think would come, and how related is this to the availability of fertilizers, particularly nitrogen, in the U.S.?
Well, like Todd, I think that really is the million-dollar question. I mean, you had Brooke Rollins a few weeks ago, I believe she said 80% of the farmers' needs had been covered, but then you had that survey coming out from Farm Bureau that suggested that number was quite a bit lower in certain parts of the country, much lower. And it's a situation that, you know, when you look at where we're at, even though that a lot of that fertilizer is here in the Midwest, or at least stateside or on its way to stateside, we're pricing it on a world market. And when you see India coming in and India subsidizes their farmers on the fertilizer, you're now competing against a country for fertilizer that essentially is going to do what it needs to do to get the fertilizer. Because remember, Modi's base is what? They're farmers. So he's going to do everything he can to keep that base happy. It's the same thing with China. You're seeing China restricting the flow of fertilizer out, restricting of the flow of sulfur out. It's the same situation, Todd. You're seeing countries now that are hoarding a major product to feed their people. Because remember, you know, most governments, when you have changing government, it's not because people are, you know, have plenty to eat. When you get a revolution and when you get a lot of people nervous about what's going on in the political side, it is because they're shortage of food. So this could become a real problem. You mentioned there's 40 plus boats sitting there. The real problem is a lot of that fertilizer that's being produced in the Middle East is just in time. So they, you know, they get the energy, they produce the fertilizer, they ship it. So now once their boats are filled, they essentially have to stop the production of fertilizer until those boats leave and then new ones come back. So even if we solve that problem today, it could still take weeks to maybe months to get this back up and running back to where we maybe have somewhat of a, at least a comfort zone. So that's going to keep these fertilizer prices elevated. Then it comes back to what is that real number of producers that have actually locked in that number. And to me, it feels like it really depends on who you talk to.
And Naomi Bloom, when you talk to producers, are there many or are they just talking about their neighbors or their friends? Or I heard that as it's related to not being able to book nitrogen supplies and other fertilizers, phosphates in particular, for the season, or that they're just so high priced that they might switch to a different crop.
I'm hearing all of the above, and I definitely have some producers who have told me that they are going to be switching some of those acres to soybeans, but I don't have a quantifiable amount on that yet. But it definitely continues to be top of mind. And over the weekend, I was with a bunch of football moms at University of Wisconsin in Platteville, and Platteville is a agriculture school. And there's a lot of moms who work in the industry or whose husbands work in the industry. And in particular, there was one wife who shared that her husband, who works, kind of covers the territory between Rockford and the western suburbs. And it's become a huge point of conversation, higher fertilizer costs in that region at his co-op that he's part of. And then also looking at shifting some of those acres to soybeans. So it is absolutely top of mind. So not only did I hear that out of direct contact from someone from Northeast and North Central Illinois, but it was also from clients that I have throughout the Midwest. So the higher price of the fertilizer, the higher price of the diesel fuel, it's all weighing on people. And I think also that we're starting to see the December corn futures spread wake up a little bit, where I'm wondering if nearby December futures, maybe trying to see if it needs to buy back some acres that maybe are getting lost towards soybeans. So it'll be very interesting to continue to hear how this goes over the coming weeks as planting really gets underway.
Okay, Greg Johnson, what have you been hearing? And then you can talk about that May WASDE report and expectations looking forward to it. Of course, they're usually, but not always, and mostly it depends on weather and crop progress planting rates. Don't change acreage in that one from what the Ag Forum developed, but what are you thinking?
Well, I've been asking producers as I talk to them if they are switching and if they did get their inputs locked in. And I also asked them if they were, since we're pretty heavy Farm Bureau territory around here, most of the producers are Farm Bureau members. I asked them if they responded to the survey. And it seems like the ones that had their inputs locked in already didn't bother to vote. So I think the ones that didn't have their inputs locked in were more likely to vote. And I think that might skew those results. I think Secretary Rollins, 80% is probably too high, but the number that the Farm Bureau came out with is probably too low. The real number is probably in between. Keep in mind that, you know, it's the USDA has a way of increasing these corn acres from the March intentions report in subsequent reports. But I think I agree with Jim. I think this year, with the higher input costs, not only in fertilizers, but in diesel fuel, soybeans are going to be the cheaper crop to produce. And as far as putting a number on it, USDA is at 95.3. That number could have gone up a little bit based on past years, but I think I'm using 94.5. So, you know, almost a million acres less, and then 85.5 on the beans, which is almost a million acres more.
Anybody else adjusting their balance sheets? Jim, I'll start with you.
You know, I'm not going to argue at 94.4 to 95. I would guess it's going to be down a little bit. I mean, where Naomi was talking about, I'm in that band just straight east of that in Rockford. I'm literally about an hour straight east of Rockford, and we just keep getting inundated with rain, Todd. This northern part of Illinois, we've had 8 inches of rain since the beginning of the year, and I know that bled into parts of Wisconsin, and if we don't dry out soon, it's going to even compound, I think, some of these acres and make it very easy for some producers to justify saying, hey, look, let's move away from the expensive corn and let's go to beans. So if that corn acres ends up at 94.5, it would not be a surprise. I think the frustrating thing is going to be, Todd, we're probably going to know that number probably maybe September, like it did this last go around. It's going to take multiple revisions, which is going to be very frustrating for the farmers and the traders out there.
Naomi, as he suggested, that rainfall a problem for farmers in parts of the northern areas of Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan. Is it big enough to make much of a difference?
Not in the short term, but potentially, yes. I think everyone's really big cutoff date, it would be May 1st in terms of getting a little bit twitchy about which way acres really ultimately fall. But yeah, it is definitely soggy throughout the Midwest and portions of it. Talking with clients in Iowa, they've been getting about a quarter inch of rain every other day. It's just enough to keep them out of field. There's a lot of producers out there who still have hog manure yet they need to spread. So they got to get that done before they can even do planting. And so that's been top of mind. Here in Wisconsin, of course, we are flooded out. It is bad. It is really, really bad. And so that's going to be an issue for us. I mean, we don't usually get planting really until that first week of May anyway, but we are really underwater. So and I think that Jim made a great point. It's going to take months and probably out to September before we know what is or what isn't. But it is really going to affect the balance sheets. Like even right now with what the USDA has for planted acres of corn, if you bring in the carry-in, if you have 180 yield and no changes to demand, that actually makes ending stocks drop down near 1.5 billion bushels. So it's going to be, I think, a touchy market this spring and summer. Really a lot, of course, more exciting than we were all thinking back in January, just how much things have changed and shifted. But absolutely, you got to keep one eye on Mother Nature and definitely another eye on the Middle East, and there's going to be a lot of volatility.
So that volatility will be there. Greg Johnson, I'm wondering if it will be volatility surrounding the range that we're in at the moment, or if there's options really for it to move higher dramatically at all, or potentially lower still.
Well, last year, December corn was kind of in a $4 range at the low. Actually, we went to 390, but let's just say $4 at the low. The high watermark last year was 480. We're already at 475. So we're kind of at the upper end of the range. We had a 2.1 carry out last year. That's what we're projecting, or that's what they were projecting early. It didn't end up that high, but basically we're projecting 2.1 right now. So I agree with what Jim said. I think these numbers will change, but they're not going to change in the next 2.5 months. And so it kind of boils down to old crop, new crop. I mean, how long do you want to hold on to old crop? That's costing you money. New crop, I think we can afford to be patient. I think we will see, you know, lower acres, lower yields, you know, that type of thing. So I think it will pay to hold on to corn for a little while. I mean, even if I'm wrong and it goes sideways, it didn't hurt us to wait. But that old crop corn, I think farmers have to be ready to hold on to that for a long time if they're waiting for higher prices. I'm just not sure in the next month or two that we're going to see anything come out from USDA or anywhere else that's really going to convince traders to run this market up. Keep in mind the funds are already long both corn and beans. They really added to their corn position a few weeks ago, and so not that they can't get longer yet, but some of that good news is already in the market, and who's going to be there to buy it to take it to the next round higher. So I think there's a difference between old and new crop marketing strategies.
So, Greg, just as a reminder, and I want to know how much corn you think, old corn, you think producers have yet to make sales on, but your draw area is about 60 miles radius or 120 miles across. Am I correct in that? So you compete directly with ADM Decatur. Logansport's kind of outside of that, but you probably bump up against the ethanol plant in Logansport as well. And so it's a fairly large area. Do I have the geography right? One, and how much old crop corn do you think you still have yet to buy from producers?
You're right. 60 miles to the east. I would say maybe 30, 40 miles to the west. Decatur. Once we get, you know, west of Monticello, west of DeLand, those areas. That's pretty much Decatur draw territory then. So, 30, 40 miles to the west, 60 miles to the east. I still think there's a good 30 to 35% of the old crop corn that has not been sold. The farmers just have not seen the prices that they think they need to see to reward the market. Soybeans, just the opposite. You know, they've been heavy sellers of beans because we've had rallies, I guess, to reward the market in soybeans, whereas corn, we just haven't had the kind of rallies that they would like to see. So I still think there's 30-35% of the old crop corn left in the farmer's hands.
Jim McCormick, does that jive with what you're thinking about old crop sales that yet need to be made?
Yeah, I mean, our numbers seem to be somewhere right around that 70-75% sold for the old crop. New crop was right around 10% is kind of what we're hearing. And I'm cautioning clients to be very careful for the old crop corn, Todd. I mean, in general, I've been telling people, you get to that U.S. Open weekend, Father's Day weekend, by the third week of June, if we're not having any kind of weather play or this crude oil market's not going ballistic, I think you need to be wanting to get it moved. Remember, last year, you know, we were looking at a carryout of a lot more corn available than a year ago. And we have several elevators that we deal with and our cohorts at John Stewart deal with are telling us they think they will be full going into the fall, probably more of a problem, not here for Illinois, but more of a problem west of the Mississippi River. But it's going to be a bad situation for some people when they try, if they hold on to this old corn too long and they walk into a situation where we've got a decent crop and the elevator's trying to handle 2 billion old plus old bushels coming to market at the same time. I like to say, you know, they'll take it off your hands, but they're not going to take it at a night price. You're going to want to give it to them. So, you know, I'm telling people to get a little bit more aggressive here the next couple of weeks. And if they want to play the what if on the Middle East, what if on the weather, that's where the board's for the option.
Yeah. Is JSA telling you the elevators are full at their moment, or are they going to fill up with?
They're going. Well, a lot of them got a big chunk of grain when it's moved up early, Todd. This first run up here when you saw May corn spike back up to 475 and you got July corn pushing back up toward 480, they got a chunk of grain. Now there's a little bit of a bid here because everyone's got that tunnel vision trying to plant. Then they expect another flush of grain here as you get into that June timeframe. And then some elevators will have 90 days worth of grain bought, they figure. And that 90 days will get them into the fall. And they won't need to buy any more old crop to get into that bridge to the new crop potentially. That's why that window of by late June, we're thinking you probably don't want to be holding on to corn too much. And even here in Eastern, and the problem, Tom, is going to be more of a Western situation, farm belt, than in Eastern. But even the Eastern, I'm a little bit worried about because of what's going on in Argentina. I have no clue how accurate the Rosario grain exchange is, but they're telling us the crop's 15 million metric tons bigger than what the USDA is working with. If the crop is that much bigger, we could have quite a bit of competition on the export market in the latter part of summer as well. And that's one more reason for me to tell people to go ahead and get it moved and use the board if you want to play the what if on a weather play.
Naomi, if the growing season is normal and what we're hearing from Jim McCormick is correct, that would cause old crop basis to crash sometime in the end of July probably and carry on for new crop right into August and September, maybe October, I would think. Is this a fear that you have?
It's a very realistic concern. It would also, you know, really follow in line with the seasonal tendency. As Jim was saying, you know, by Father's Day weekend, if there's not any weather issue in sight on the longer term forecast for July and pollination, then we have lost our reason to see the market have some sort of a significant summer rally. And then usually what happens, you're right, guys. I mean, usually it's the middle of June and then the middle of July. And then finally the middle of August is when things bottom out. And if there is all of that grain that yet needs to come to town and no weather or war issue in sight, now we're talking about fundamentally a totally different story, where corn futures for July right now trading closer to 460, maybe start to slither down towards the $4 handle. So we're at this point here with this market where we're all aware there's definitely reasons why prices can work higher and all of a sudden go higher than we even anticipated, you know, just months ago. But also, it just still boils down to Mother Nature and ultimately what she has in store for us. So you really have to be prepared for either scenario. And as long as you're not in the fields right now, be thinking and doing the math on potentially making some cash sales or locking in some basis contracts. And to Jim's point, if things do wake up weather-wise or war-wise, you can look at different call option scenarios or different board ideas to have re-ownership on paper, but just take some of that risk off the table.
I'm thinking about the war just a bit. If it were to drag on in some form that long, what impact that might have. Greg Johnson, as I'm considering that, what I'm coming up with, and Naomi, you need to jump in here too, is that if the price of crude oil continued to spike, it probably would not carry corn with it, given the number of bushels that would be around, the lack of the high price of gasoline, particular diesel fuel as well, would slow the economy down. It just could be really ugly. Anhydrous prices would be extraordinary in the fall. At the same time, it could be a very ugly situation. That's the way I'm viewing it. How do you lay it out in your mind, Greg?
Well, I look at where we are this year, and I'm trying to compare it to where we were last year. Last year on this date, May corn was 480. New crop December 25 corn was 465. So we had a 15-cent inverse in the market. The market was telling farmers they wanted them to move that old crop corn. In our area, they didn't, because it was so dry that farmers were just convinced that prices had to go higher. This year, May corn's at 450, July corn's at 460, but new crop December is 475. So there's carry in the market this year, 25 cents, about 4 cents a month right now. So the farmers aren't going to get hurt at this point. And to Jim's point, yes, the western guys west of the Mississippi, they probably have to be a lot more concerned because their basis really could slip. That's where most of the stocks are. But here in the east, farmers can probably afford to hold on a little bit longer. You don't want to be the last one out the door.
Proof once again that probably I tend to be too pessimistic, Naomi, in my outlook. How do you see the fall numbers playing out?
What I'm watching with crude oil is that $120 resistance area that is the top of a 20-year downtrend line. If we have a fundamental reason for crude oil to trade through $120, I think it's just going to excite commodities for the short term, and you're going to see corn market push higher just on fund trading activity. And I think back to other years where we've had war conflict, either Russia-Ukraine or years past in the Middle East, where we have that conflict and it drives crude oil prices. But I don't recall, and anyone can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I don't recall this fertilizer thing being an issue like it is now in other years past. So quite frankly, I'm not sure how the market responds to this going forward. I'm not sure what transpires in terms of pricing short-term, long-term, and what it ultimately means for production. So that's going to be on my radar to be watching. But in the short term, if crude oil just kind of starts to just continue to limp along sideways, it's got really good support at $80. And that might keep corn market supported for now until we get to know, like I said earlier, a little bit more about the weather as well.
Anything to add, Jim McCormick?
I still think, you know, the trade's going to be transfixed on the crude oil. And it'll only carry you so far, Todd. I think for next fall, I think what you need to be where the world's going to be worried about, where the market could get itself into a bull market, is if the ceasefire gets to really, very brutal, and we really, and they, and the Iranians really start destroying infrastructure in other Middle Eastern countries, where it really slows down the production of fertilizer. And then you're going to get a situation where the southern half of the fertilizer industry, the southern hemisphere, I think will panic a little bit. And in fact, they won't have fertilizer for South, you know, South America and Australia. That's where it could get very scary. And you could see the kind of a situation where panic kit sets in and the market jumps in to try to play that food inflationary play. Do I think that's going to happen, Todd? No, I do not believe that's going to happen. I think there is a lot of political pressure to get a deal done very, very quick by the Chinese. The Chinese import a lot of crude oil from Iran to feed their little teapot producers. So they have an economic reason to get the price of crude oil down. But more importantly, the Chinese export, their economy is based on exporting goods to around the world. Those goods are not going to be able to be bought if the price of energy stays up here, the price of diesel, where a lot of cars in Europe are diesel. So the Chinese need the world energy prices to go down. And then lastly, we are kind of caught in the Chinese grip in the fact that we need their rare earths now more than ever to rebuild our stockpiles of the weapons that we have used in the last 35, 40 days. So I think there's an economic incentive for the Chinese to get everyone to work together. And I would guess that a deal will get done. Like I said, if it won and if it got really, really bad on a fertilizer price, it could get interesting for the world as people panic. But I would get that odds of that happening very, very limited.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. We'll start with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Greg?
Well, I think farmers are right now focused on getting into the field and getting stuff planted, and they're also focused on the headline news out of the Middle East every day. I just don't want people to lose sight of the big picture. We've had almost $5 corn two or three times. We've got to $4.97, $4.98. We're at $4.75 right now. So have offers in 15, 20 cents higher, just under that $5 resistance level. Historically, that's going to be a good price. That's better than what we sold last year. And I know the inputs are higher and maybe we don't make as much money, if any, but the market doesn't care. If we, if we've got a 2 billion bushel plus carryout, we're going to see lower prices in the fall. So use any kind of small rally to get some new crop corn sold.
Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, your final thoughts.
So bringing it back to the cattle market, I just wanted to point out that June live cattle and August live cattle futures today posted bearish key reversals. That market has been trending higher since March, and we are overbought now on the charts, stochastic lines crossing into potentially here a sell signal. And so we have the cattle on feed report tomorrow afternoon. We're expecting it to show supportive news. But if it's not over the top bullish, this market may run out of friendly news in the short term to justify the market rally to continue. You have to keep an eye on what Secretary of Ag Rollins is going to be saying tomorrow when she's speaking in Texas. And I think there's, you know, the cattle market fundamentally has the support, but then the concern continues to be with higher priced crude oil, can the consumer afford beef and steak at the grocery store while energy prices remain high? So just a tone of caution, if you are a cattle producer, really maybe consider some hedges ahead of tomorrow afternoon's report.
I suppose we expect, and my apologies for not asking that question. I had it on my list, and as soon as you went to it, not asking about Texas, I think that probably is likely to be screwworm related. And then the other point, Naomi, and you can maybe address this, JBS did manage to come to an agreement with its workers that are unionized at the plant in Colorado, and that should stabilize the packing industry there, and not force prices higher trying to move animals further into different spaces. So I guess that would be a downward pressure, maybe, despite the fact that it's bringing supply back in. Is that right?
Yeah. And the market actually, for the most part, you know, we took that news, we absorbed it, and just the traders didn't do too much with it one way or the other, because I think it was more focused on keeping an eye on the border in general and what's going to be transpiring there. And then just also watching day-to-day cash market values, keeping an eye on the box beef values. Where is the consumer demand? Weekly export sales this week were down 30% from the week prior. So we're seeing some of that demand slip a little bit from that standpoint, and the imports continue to roll in to help offset our lower production that we have here in the country. So just, again, a tone of caution, keep an eye on that market. A simple correction could mean $10. So really just keep an eye on it.
And finally, Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, your final thoughts.
We've had a pretty good rally off of the winter lows. In a lot of cases, Dad, it went a lot higher than a lot of people were thinking, unfortunately, due to a cause of a conflict in the Middle East, but it has moved the markets. I'm going to encourage producers to make chain to keep an eye on the return on investment. Don't get too bulled up on this. But you also want to keep your flexibility a little bit there. As we discuss, this is going to be debated. The size of this crop, the lack of fertilizer, will we go full tilt on fertilizer? What's it going to have on yield? It's going to keep this market very volatile. So you want to keep your, you want to play it both ways. Defend your revenue, but also maybe have a way to protect the upside in case the weather breaks the wrong way this summer.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our thanks go to our panelists, Naomi Bloom, Greg Johnson, and Jim McCormick. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, or look it up by name, Commodity Week, in your favorite podcast applications. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.